on Sunday, they said Manu was on a palliative, on a morphine drip, and his body is shutting down. So say your goodbye. And this time my physician was able to get me a test within hours. So while I was doing that, I told Manu, you need to let go. Just don't wait for me. And I think that was, when I first spoke to him, I didn't tell him that. And I went back and I said, I gave him permission not to hold on to. And I said, you're done. You're done suffering. You're done hurting. I'll see you. I'll see you soon. Just go. And within a few hours of the conversation, he was gone. So when I flew, I knew I was going there to plan a funeral. And I reached his house, and he had published an article in Adele magazine called Leaving Dentistry This Way Out, about how his cancer had changed his perspective of dentistry and how he had sold his practice due to cancer diagnosis and what he felt about life in general.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. In this week's episode, I welcome Dr. Parul Dua Makkar, who's a dentist, speaker, grief coach, and author. And we explore how personal tragedy can become a mission of healing and advocacy. After losing her younger brother, Dr. Manu Dua, to oral cancer at just 34 years old, Dr. Makkar transformed unimaginable grief into purpose. Together, we discuss the critical importance of oral cancer awareness, early detection, oral systemic health, burnout prevention in healthcare professionals, and the emotional resilience needed to navigate devastating loss. Dr. Makkar also shares practical oral health strategies, self-screening methods, and how grief can either break us or become the catalyst for meaningful change. Dr. Parul Dua Makkar is a dentist, speaker, author, grief coach, and mentor dedicated to helping healthcare professionals lead with both clinical excellence and emotional resilience. After the devastating loss of her younger brother to oral cancer, she transformed personal tragedy into a mission of advocacy, education, and compassionate care. Through her platform, Do a Good Job, Dr. Makkar educates clinicians on the importance of early oral cancer detection while mentoring healthcare providers in navigating grief, preventing burnout, and sustaining patient-centered leadership. She's the author of Life Interrupted, Dr. Dua's Survival Guide, Stories of Friends and Family Lost, and The Legacy Journal, all of which reflect her commitment to helping others transform adversity into healing and purpose. Dr. Makkar's work bridges the worlds of dentistry, emotional wellness, and healthcare leadership, empowering professionals to care for both their patient and themselves with greater awareness, resilience, and compassion. Please check out all the ways you can find Dr. Makkar's work, including her books. And before we jump into the episode, just a quick reminder that listening to this podcast does not establish a therapeutic relationship. These episodes are for informational and educational purposes only and are not affiliated with my therapeutic practice. If you are seeking mental health support, please reach out to a licensed professional. Now let's just jump into the episode.
Dr. Parul, welcome to Easy Conversations. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Parul.
I'm excited. We have actually met in person, so it's always good. Due to the nature of technology, sometimes you don't actually meet people in person that come on the show, but always a pleasure to connect with people like yourself. And I know we're going to talk a lot about just oral health, but there's a personal story behind why you're passionate about this, not only because of the field you work in, but something very personal for you. And I definitely want to get into that. And perhaps maybe we can start there if you would like to share a little bit about yourself and who you are.
Sure. Yes. We actually met in Florida. I was there for a dental conference. I'm a general dentist. I practice in New York. I'm from Calgary. And I lost my younger and only sibling to oral cancer, who was also a dentist practicing Calgary. And so since his death, I've been vocal about what oral cancer is, how we recognize different signs, symptoms, and early detection with preventing lives, because Manu was only 34 at the time of his death. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And how long ago was that?
Depending, as of today, this weekend, it'll be 5 years. Mm-hmm. He would have been, yeah. It still feels like yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I can appreciate that. And I'm based in Calgary too, so definitely have that connection too. Now, the other piece around this, a lot of people have started to talk about oral health. It's definitely one of the things that maybe gets a lot more focused than perhaps it did in the past. But what are your views around oral health? And we can definitely talk about the cancer side of things, but does it get enough attention? Do people put a lot of emphasis on it? Are people being preventative? Do you see in your practice and just working with patients?
Sure. As usual, dentists get the bad rep that, oh, it's going to be scary. It's the worst experience. I hate coming to the dentist. We get to hear that a lot. But oral health over the years with more and more research has been linked to diabetes, to low birth rates in pregnant women, to strokes, cardiac issues, a host of issues. Not only going to the dentist, they're not just assessing your teeth. We're more than cavity hunters. When we're looking in your mouth, we're looking at your oral airway space. Are you breathing? Do you have sleep apnea, which is linked to weight gain and a whole lot of other issues, falling asleep behind the wheel? So I think the public sometimes has a misconception that, oh, you're just going to clean my teeth and look. Why do I need x-rays? Because we can't see what's going on underneath. If it doesn't hurt, then I don't have a problem. We all know that pain is not really an indicative that something is wrong. Things can harbor before, and we want to be preventative. There is more and more technology. There's AI technology that's helping dentists diagnose early lesions, also more conservative forms of treatment that we're not going straight into a root canal or having to extract. There are more treatment options, more availability. And I think it is removing that stigma that's been attached to dentistry. This misconception like, oh yeah, I had the tooth pulled and the doctor sat on my chest and yanked it out. That misconception is no longer there. And we're just trying to still shift that paradigm. But yeah, people come in. It's not the favorite, but it all goes into educating and making people aware that how it's linked to everything. And if you don't have good oral hygiene, if you don't have great teeth, you're not able to smile. It decreases your confidence level, how you show up to the world. You can't eat good food because you're not able to chew harder things. So it affects your nutrition, your diet. So it's linked to your overall health. It's the gateway to it.
Yeah, and I appreciate you touching on that, because some of the symptoms or consequences you're talking about can affect our well-being. And nowadays we talk a lot about mental health, and some people have started to link oral health to mental health as well, just because of some of the things you're sharing. At a high level, what can people do, right? I know for me, there were certain challenges with my teeth at times, but a lot of it was dietary choices. And as soon as I improved my diet just for my overall well-being, I started to notice the additional benefit to oral health. But I just wanted to get your thoughts around some of that and what can people do. And so that way, going to the dentist is just for a checkup as opposed to being worried about what are they going to find and what are they going to have to yank out, or is there going to be any surgery involved and stuff like that. Yeah.
So like you mentioned, diet is really important. It's sugar. It's digested by certain bacteria. So there are a lot of things you can do preventatively. You can get a salivary test to see what kind of buffering capability you have of your saliva. You can see what kind of bacteria you have and then go from there. But just traditionally, brushing and flossing, getting in between the teeth, and a lot of people forget to floss. Brush only gets to clean the front and the back of your teeth, not in between, especially if you have tight contacts or appliances like bridges and you need to get underneath and clean them. But diet plays a big role. What you're consuming throughout the day, if you don't have a chance to brush your teeth after a meal, and you shouldn't really be brushing anyways, at least an hour after eating, chew some gum, drink lots of water, help your saliva neutralize all the bacteria in your mouth. You want to, if you're drinking lots of coffee during the day, try not to have sugar in it. What kind of diet? Is it a heavy carb diet? Because sugar comes in different forms. So be mindful of what you're eating. And if you are drinking a lot of soda and or juices that contain high amount of sugar, even if you're doing fruits and making smoothies, they may have natural sugars, but it's still sugar. Use a straw so there is less contact on your teeth. Try not to have many acidic foods because acidic drops the pH levels, and that increases the risk of cavities. So if you don't chew on lemons, don't eat raw tomatoes, or if you do, drink some water to help balance the pH level. So things like that, alkaline water is better than some of the fizzy waters that we have that are more acidic in content. Again, or use a straw so you have less contact on your teeth. Not to chew or suck on candy for a long time because you're just giving your teeth a sugar bath. So these are like little things that you can do just to be mindful of what you're putting into your body. Yeah. And that goes to having a healthy diet. And we think we're healthy with eating all this fruit. But again, we have natural sugars. Sugar is sugar, and it gets broken down. Yeah.
And general practice, I think most people are probably aware of this, but brushing your teeth in the morning before bed and flossing, is there a better time to floss? Is it before bed, in the morning, or both?
You want to, if you have to pick a time, especially with kids, you want to brush before you go to bed at night. Because during the day, again, you want to brush before you start eating, not after breakfast, because you want to wait an hour after eating. So you ideally want to brush right when you get up in the morning, have your breakfast, go on with your day. And then at nighttime, you want to floss first and then brush after. Another thing is when you're spitting, you don't, after you brush your teeth, don't rinse your mouth, kind of just spit out the toothpaste. So it can help with the fluoride. Instead of having to rinse it out, you can use a mouthwash. Anything that is, I don't like the alcohol-based one, especially if you've had a cut or burn, it'll kind of really hurt. So there are lots of great products out there that even Listerine has non-alcohol-based mouthwashes out there. And electric brushes, obviously a little bit easier to use. It has a smaller head. They're always timed for 2 minutes. So you don't have to consciously think, or for kids or older people, you can just think of the happy birthday song then twice, then you know you've done your brushing. Yeah. But with technology and having Bluetooth on some of these toothbrushes, the electronic, they will they'll figure out where you're brushing, how well you're brushing, which surfaces you're missing. You can really go deep into that. But the essential point is you want to get all four quadrants and you're spending enough time cleaning and getting rid of that plaque. Plaque is something that comes on right after you eat. So it's when it's not removed adequately that it becomes harder and becomes calculus. And that's when you have to come to the dentist and get that cleaning done. And everybody's different on it. Lots of great tools. There's even automatic flossers out there, brushing your tongue, because we all have little grooves in our tongues and food can get trapped there. Bacteria, bad breath is contributed to that. So make sure you brush your tongue. And you want to just make sure you definitely brush before you go to bed at night, because during the nighttime, you're not talking, you're not eating, you're not drinking water. Your mouth is drier. So you want to make sure all that food and gunk is out of your teeth.
Yeah. And with flossing now, you have these water flossers. Do you feel that they're adequate? Or are they better? I think they're definitely convenient. I prefer them personally, but yeah.
No, they're great, especially if you have appliances where you cannot get underneath, like a bridge, especially for people who have braces. You cannot remove them and there's stuff that gets caught. They're phenomenal. They're really a great tool, and it's just being consistent on using it like anything else.
For sure. Now, some common things I've learned over the years that I just want to get your thoughts, just maybe for personal reasons, but also perhaps sharing with the audience. Is there a specific direction we should brush our teeth in? So I was told you want to go up and down, not across, because that can damage the enamel and stuff like that. Okay.
Yeah, it can cause abrasion. First, you want to always have a soft brush. You don't want to have any hard or medium. Those are great for cleaning the house. but always the soft bristles. The whole idea of brushing is removing the plaque off your teeth. You can actually get, your dentist can have them, you can get them on Amazon, little tablets that will stain your teeth purple. That's where the plaque is. So the whole object is that you're removing all the plaque and you can kind of see how you're doing. But you want to angulate the brush like at a 45 degree angle towards the gums and kind of go in circular motions. You want to remove the plaque off away from the tooth and then rinse your mouth afterwards. So you kind of angulate towards the top for the top teeth and bottom teeth. You angle down and then just go in a circular. Mm. You do not want to scrub. We're not scrubbing. We're just gently removing with a soft bristle.
Okay. And other things I was told over the years, don't bite your teeth or rip off. Sometimes you have plastic packaging and people will use their teeth to rip it off.
Bottles.
Don't do that. Yeah.
You want to open beer bottles?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you need to, young men are listening. Yes. Don't. So your teeth are actually stronger than bone. I don't know if people know that or not. They exude a lot of pressure. And they're meant for chewing and eating. We have different types of teeth for different functions. So your front teeth, your incisors are dividing into things, and your back molars are into chewing and mashing the food down so that you can swallow. So of course, if you have missing teeth, you want to replace every single tooth's important. But as far as biting, I do want to mention, not only we want to be mindful if we're grinding and putting a lot of pressure, especially with lots of stresses, we're clenching, we're putting a lot of pressure, we're putting 600 pounds of pressure on our teeth, tend to break and fracture. We don't want, and this happened a lot during COVID, people being stressed out and they would be breaking parts of their teeth, needing crowns. Another thing is biting into hard things, like chewing on ice. That's a big no-no. Chewing on kernels, popcorn kernels. I know everybody loves that little end bit. I do, and I have to always remind myself, don't open a pistachio. If it's got the casing on it, don't open that with your teeth. There are tools you can use for that. Your teeth are meant to just chew with and help you swallow your food. So if you find yourself crunching or grinding at night, your spouse is next to you and oh, you're grinding all night, you're going to be ending up with TMJ issues, the joint here, headaches, and you're going to have other factors. And that's when you go into assessing for sleep apnea or getting a night guard. But definitely, I have seen teeth split in half from biting into ice and on anything hard. So not to use it for opening, because you can really chip off the edge of the tooth even. And those are tricky to fill. And or you end up with a crown, which is very invasive, which doesn't have to be, especially if the tooth is a virgin tooth, which has never been touched before. And yeah, so
yeah,
just smile and eat. That's all your teeth are
yes.
for.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you talked about night guards or in general wearing mouth guards. I know for contact sports for myself, I end up wearing a mouth guard, and sometimes you can get them designed custom made specifically for your jaw. But there's a lot of conversations nowadays I'm hearing and seeing around the biomechanics of the jaw. What are your thoughts around that? Do we need to be extra mindful of that? And do night guards actually help with that too? I know you touched on some of the consequences with migraines, headaches, but just general health around being aware of the biomechanics when it comes to operating our jaw and stuff like that.
Sure. So first, to touch up on the mouthpieces, mouth guards during any sport, especially contact, especially, and if you have braces in your mouth, then you don't want that to rub against your cheek. Mm-hmm. So yes, mouth guards, they're always custom made. Can you get them over the counter? Yes. But the plastic is not as sturdy and it's not custom. So it tends to warp. It's not as stable. So ideally, you want to have a custom made at the dentist. They'll scan you, take your impressions, and that's done. But as far as the grinding, so there are really two reasons, main reasons why people grind besides stress and all that other stuff, is one, if there's an airway issue. So the top of the mouth acts as the roof of your mouth is basically like the floor of your nose. So if you have a very constricted palate, the roof of your mouth, then you have a very small nose area issue. And the tongue should actually, when you're sleeping and when you're resting, and you can be mindful when you think about it, the tongue, when you're sleeping, should rest on the roof of your mouth. And you breathe through your nose. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, that's when you're leaning towards snoring. You might even, with people who have severe sleep apnea, you'll hear them gasp for air at night and they will pause. These are episodes when they're stopped breathing. And that's when they have hypoxia, low oxygen levels, or their brains are not getting enough oxygen at all. And that leads to other stuff, but it linked to high blood pressure, cardiac issues as well. So if you're grinding for the airway issue, if you stick out your tongue, you can't see your entire back tonsillar area and the tongue kind of blocking it. You have a big tongue. You have scallop tongue. These are some of the signs of sleep apnea where you should address it. And this is why you're grinding. So in that, a mouth guard is not going to help you. It's actually going to be horrible. You're going to hate it. In the other hand, there is, and in the case of sleep apnea, the movement of the jaw. So you want to either expand the airway in some manner. For younger people, we can do an arch expansion. For older people, they actually bring with appliances, so a CPAP machine, which is the gold standard, or mouth appliances that are fabricated at the dental office, they will try to move the jaw forward and try to open up the back airway space. So that is one way to rectify the situation without being surgical. And the other option, if it is truly like stress-related grinding, then you're not sleeping. You're sleeping properly, but you're just stressed. And that's when you have the TMJ. And with that, treatment becomes Botox injections, dental PT. You actually get a physical therapist who specializes with TMJ. And you help relax the muscle and figure out what's going on. And to know if some of the signs that I shared about sleep apnea, but the only true way to do it is get a sleep test. And you can do them at home. You can do them at a sleep clinic. But to be seeing how much, what's your oxygen level? When are you stopping breathing? Is that what the cause is? So mouth guard, typically, there are ways that we can send you with a test that I can send with a small little piece and say, go home and sleep with it. If you can sleep with it, it's a little mouth, like a bite check. And we send you home with it. And if you sleep well, then we know it's a grinding issue. And the teeth are basically, the appliance opens up the teeth so the teeth are not meeting in the back and people are able to get a restful sleep. But if it's a sleep apnea issue, they're just going to throw it out and they'll be like, no, I can't sleep with that. Yeah, there are two different aspects to it and how you want your.
Okay. And I'm seeing a lot of talk and marketing around using these different, I don't know if they're called mouth guards per se, but a lot of younger guys, perhaps if they want to change their jawline, they're using these things. Oh, so yeah.
With the mewing, I have two teenage boys.
Okay.
They're trying to get that, but you don't want to change your jaw. Yeah. You can do it, whatever. They do some, it's like toning, but you don't want to put an appliance in there and change your bite because you alter your bite, you're not going to be able to chew and you're going to end up with a whole bunch of other issues. So you get that jawline in. I have not encountered having patients do that, but really do not alter your jaw. It's all interconnected. This is the only moving part that we have in our skull, the jaw. And if you imbalance it, and we know that even if you get a small filling done and if the bite is off, it drives you insane and it will lead to headaches and discomfort and pain. And so if you are using appliances to alter the way your jaw is, it's going to be a host of other issues that you don't really want.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And maybe to shift gears a little bit, let's talk about the oral cancer piece more from the personal side, as you shared at the beginning, but even talking about the significance of it. You and I have chatted before about preventative methods, seeing the signs and symptoms, how we can self-screen. So let's talk about that. And especially even with your personal story with your brother, he himself being a dentist, how do you navigate that situation and make sense of it all?
You don't. This day. Yes, Manu was young in his 30s. He had a startup practice he did in 2016. He was very proud of it. Young guy, paid off loans, started a brand new practice and high on life. And non-smoker and occasional going out, weekends, drinking, but not like he was not an alcoholic. And he ended up with a lesion on his tongue. He showed it to me in June and of 2019. And he said, what do you think? I've got this thing. It's hurting me. And I showed it to bunch of surgeons that I know. I live, for your listeners, I'm in New York. He's in Canada and Calgary. Mm-hmm. It's a long flight. So it's not something I can be like, hey, kiddo, let's go get you a biopsy. Mm-hmm. And I just advise him and say, that looks like cancer. You need to get this tested. I'm 30. He was 32 at that time. And he's, I can't have cancer. That's not it. I have an oral surgeon friend. We're looking at it. And there is a part denial in that, being young. The misconception is that cancer cannot happen. If traditionally you think of oral cancer as that older male who's the chain smoker and heavy alcoholic, that's usually the picture. And the demographics is changing. More and more younger population in the second and third decades of life are getting what's causing it. We don't know, without risk factors. Manu's risk factor was the fact that he was a male. But usually the traditional risk factors are smoking, drinking, being out in the sun exposure, just like melanomas, skin cancers. You can have oral cancer. And betel quid, smokeless tobacco, any tobacco use, vaping, all those are risk factors. But the big one, and Canada is a big proponent of this, is not that it has it, but for prevention, is the human papillomavirus, which is the most sexually transmitted virus in the United States. 80% of us get it. For some reason, people with good immune system, it eradicates from the body, but for some reason it holds on and it causes more of the posterior cancer. So think Michael Douglas. But those are more posterior. Manu's was on the tongue, which is an anterior cancer. So his was an oral cavity cancer and not related to HPV. So we couldn't figure out a risk factor for him. And denial was there. He was prescribed prednisone, which is an immunosuppressant, without a biopsy. And that's a key thing when people, your listeners, do not have a, without a diagnosis, not to have a prescription, because we want to know what we're treating. Is it bacterial, fungal? Is it abrasion? What is causing this? Mm-hmm. And that I, again, hindsight is 2020. We're guessing games at this point, but maybe it made his cancer worse. And within a month, that lesion looked very different when I saw him in the summer when I was there for the stampede. And he's, yeah, I was waiting. And his signs, besides having this lesion, which started getting worse and more painful, it was not painful, but then he had earache. He had trouble eating. We went out for sushi. He's, I can't have it. I don't want wasabi. It hurts. So trouble eating certain foods, just pain, discomfort, jaw pain, earache, just unilateral as the cancer had progressed. And when he did get the biopsy that August, it was a stage 2 squamous cell carcinoma, which is predominantly what oral cancer is, 90% are, and also a neck involvement. And for your listeners, this is how cancer travels through the lymph node, through the blood. So this area of our neck area has the largest number of lymph nodes in our entire body. And this is why recognizing the signs and symptoms early on is essential before it spreads into the lymphs. With Manu, the lymph, because of the lymph node progression, eventually it transferred all the way to his lung lining and then to his pelvic bone. So that's quite a distance within a year and a half. Like, his first surgery was in August of 2019. By December of 2020, that lesion had spread all the way down to his pelvic bone. It was quick. Metastasis is common for these lesions. Pain is not always the indicative factor. It is looking for anything that's not healing in your mouth that's red or white. When it gets painful, we're looking at other bigger options for treatment. Yeah, you can be mindful. So if you burn your tongue, you had a hot pizza or hot tea, it should go away within 2 weeks. Anything in your mouth should heal within 2 weeks. And if it doesn't, that's a cause for concern. So even if you have a herpetic lesion or you have an ulcer, anything in your mouth should heal within 2 weeks. And the other factor is you can do a self-exam like you would do a breast exam at home. You look at when you're brushing, just look around, looks anything different, just stick out your tongue, move it from side to side. Do you feel any pain swallowing? Do you have any nodes that you feel that are unilateral? Usually unilateral is more indicative that there's something going on. And get answers. If your dentist sends you to get a biopsy to ENT, have the ENT do the biopsy, push for it. And I feel like in Canada, I don't know how the listeners would take this or not, but I feel like there is such a lapse of treatment that I have met survivors who are stage 4 cancer survivors for 20 years. And Manu was young, healthy, with no comorbidities, not high blood pressure, none of these risk factors, any other systemic diseases. Mm-hmm. But he played rugby. He was a provincial for high school. He was a provincial champion or winner. And he played squash. You couldn't beat him on the court. Tennis, badminton. Like, this kid was amazing in sports. And he would be kayaking even after his surgeries and treatment because he needed it, and it was during COVID. But he was a sporty kid, so healthy, young, not overweight. And he could have beaten cancer if he had gotten more appropriate, quicker treatment, timely treatment. So that's always been key thing with Canada, but it's not the narrative, and I'm trying to change the narrative to be a little bit better.
Yes. And how would you like to change the narrative based on this experience?
Push for aggressive treatment on young people. Manu had his first surgery. It was an 8-hour surgery, and I'm grateful for all the doctors because the surgery was done beautifully. He had half his tongue removed. And for your listeners, it's a long 8-hour with the team. You have oral surgeons, vascular surgeons, ENTs, or oral surgeons. You have a whole big team in there. And to coordinate everybody's schedule, get the OR time, and it was done in unbelievable short time. But the follow-up care wasn't there. So when he was flapped open, he had a neck dissection as well. They didn't radiate him. He didn't get radiation right after. He should have gotten that. That would have helped with the neck nodes, because that was one of the reasons his cancers returned, was in the nodes. The nodes swelled up and it was diagnosed again. So the tongue lesion was gone because half the tongue was removed and everything was excised, clear margins. But cancer nodes that were determined weren't eradicated with radiation or chemo. That was the big lapse. And they noticed a chest lesion on the same side of the body, and they did not biopsy it. Even though it was small, they checked it off. Oh yeah, we see a CB on a CT scan. They didn't do a PET scan to see if there's any other metastasis. And that was, his cancer returned in April of 2020, right when COVID hit, borders were shut down, the world was in chaos, and he did not get that extra treatment, like, let's radiate you. No, let's just remove the neck mass and go home. They saw the chest lesion. They said, we'll monitor it. Go home. And we'll see you in 6 months. The 6 months got pushed again. It wasn't like, hey, this is a cancer patient. We need to be up on our recalls. We need to be up seeing anything, especially with the mass that was seen on his chest. In October, that lesion was to be diagnosed. It got pushed to November. And the lesion had grown in his chest 4 times the size. There was still no PET scan done to check for any other metastasis. He couldn't breathe. And did they do a biopsy right away? No, that got pushed to December. This is a cancer patient. He's had 2 surgeries. He's coming, you've seen the metastasis or lesion grow in his chest 4 times the size. It's on that left side of the body. And he's gone through chemo radiation. We still have this lesion. What is going on? It was not assessed and was pushed to December for biopsy for December 7th. December 1st, he was in the hospital for failure to breathe because they finally did a drain on the fluid buildup on his chest. And that was positive for squamous cell carcinoma. And they did not even put a chest port in him. And it went, every day he went to the hospital to get it drained and put back, drain and go home, until finally they put a chest port in. So there was, and that's the thing that I want to change. There is too much time span between appropriate treatment and getting the appropriate treatment, that to shorten, to be more aggressive with the treatment, especially if the patient can handle it, somebody like Manu. If somebody who's 70 and 80 and has some other issues going on, and people will make conscious choices that, no, I don't want to end life with radiation. What is it going to give me? Maybe 5 more years. They make conscious decisions to not do cancer treatment because it is taxing on the body. It's taxing on the family. But catching it at stage 2, let's push for everything quicker and get it. So that today Manu would be sharing his story, not me. And that's the narrative I want to change in the world. Mm-hmm. Canadian health system is doing, and I'm sure this is shared in other platforms with different procedures, but getting that quick, timely manner, because we're saving lives at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And what I'm hearing from you is the level of urgency wasn't there. And is that more of a hindsight thing, or this is just practical things that they should have been? Yeah.
I kind of think, in my opinion, the doctors are all great. I don't know if it's the fault of the system or where the lapses. I will give you a prime example. I had a friend who was a physician. She was diagnosed with stage 1 breast cancer. Mm. All right. Within a month, she had a double mastectomy, chemo, radiation, the whole. She was diagnosed in June, and I would say by September, everything was done. Like in 3 months, they did a PET scan on her. They found out she needed a root canal because her tooth lit up, but PET scan was done. Checked for metastasis. This is a young patient. She's not even 50. Double mastectomy, chemo, radiation, get her back. She's working and seeing patients again and in remission. Again, there's a different form of cancer, but I knew a very well-known survivor for 24 years. She had stage 4 oral cancer. She had part of her neck and tongue removed, and she's surviving. There is the chef who was diagnosed recently. I don't know her name. She can barely talk because she had the very similar cancer. Mm. But there are, again, young survivors, and it's just getting the treatment. A, knowing your signs and symptoms. I think Manu was a little bit at fault there because you're not thinking when you are in your practice, you're seeing patients. Cancer is like the last thing on your mind. Mm-hmm. But getting that earlier diagnosis and getting that earlier treatment and a more aggressive treatment to really give your patient the fighting chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wanted to emphasize something you shared around not only being aware of the signs and symptoms that you've shared, but also that self-screening piece, right? I know you talked about it, just screening. And just to clarify further, when you're brushing your teeth, just making sure you're checking. And you said any type of issues that you're experiencing should go away in a couple of weeks. If it lasts longer, then maybe you need to consider getting a check.
Pain is not an indicative. That's one thing. Two, you can do this anywhere. You're sitting, doing your makeup, you're sitting in the car, waiting at a red light, just flip up your visor, take a look. When you're looking inside, you want to, I can show you, demonstrate it, but you can make sure you wash your hands, but you can stick your fingers and feel around your gums and your lip area just to see if anything, you feel like a node, you like a little bump. Pull your cheeks to the side, take a look inside, see if anything's there. We all have lights on our cameras. Take a picture, send it to your dentist. Hey, I saw this. What do you think? This is the date I saw it. And taking a picture is really good because you can see if there are any changes in the next couple of weeks. You can share it with your dentist when you go back and say, hey, I noticed this. What do you think it looks like now? You can make sure you check the roof of your mouth, stick your tongue out, make sure you check the floor. So lift your tongue up because that's one of the highest areas where there's cancer. Your tongue, your lips, your gingiva, the floor of the mouth. So you want to just lift your tongue up, see underneath, you see anything white or red. So anything white or red is more concerning. You may have a blue mark sometimes. That's usually an amalgam tattoo, like a silver filling tattoo there. You may have a black area, maybe a melanoma, or just melanin. Darker people will have these more brownish gingivas. So just looking around what you can see clinically on your own. You can grab a little mouth mirror from Amazon to check the roof of your mouth and check yourself out in the mirror. It's your body and you got only one of it. Take care of it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And in your case, unfortunately, it just didn't end with the loss of your brother, right? There was more grief. Are you able to talk about that? Because there's more to the story, right?
Yes. Manu was my younger and only brother. I watched him come into the world. We were about almost 8 years apart. So I changed his diapers and I also welcomed him to the world and also set him free. It was the most devastating thing that I think would happen in my lifetime. And I think I should be done. I've had a lot of grief my grief quota is pretty maxed out.
Yeah.
But, and he entered the world of dentistry because of me. I was a dentist, yeah. Followed my footsteps. And I felt failed because when he was initially diagnosed, I didn't go for his surgery because I had just gone. And he had this 8-hour surgery, needed post-care. My parents were there. But when he was re-diagnosed in 2020, borders were shut down and I couldn't travel. So I physically could not make that. You needed 3-day PCR testing. My parent, the vaccines were still not out at that time. New York was at the epicenter. Bodies were being thrown in trucks. And my parents were very scared. They're like, we're already going through trauma of one kid going through this treatment. We don't want you to travel. You have young kids. And what if you get COVID? It was a disarray. So I did not go. And so there is a little bit of guilt that I had to work through it. Guilt of not being able to help as a dentist, getting him to get the earlier diagnosis through the surgery, through the treatment, making those decisions, even though I told him you could do it on Zoom. Number two, guilt of a sister, what I couldn't do for him as a patient and as an older sister, it was my entire job was to protect him and take care of him. Especially I was like his second mom. And so I felt failed as that and failed as a daughter. I could not help my parents. They were older. My mom was still working. She would go to work and then cook fresh food for him and then have him eat fresh food. He followed a very strict diet. He was on a keto diet. He reduced the amount of sugar because sugar. So he would get pizza and he would just eat the toppings and not eat the crust. So there were a lot of factors where there was guilt involved. And when he passed, it was also very tragic. I was working and it was a Friday and we were all like very accustomed to the fact that, you know what, he's going to the hospital. He's sick. He's getting drained. This is always, he was getting palliative. He had a hospital bed at home and it was a Friday night like any other. And Papa said, he's having trouble breathing. We're going to take him in after he finishes dinner. Don't call him. He's going to be admitted. No biggie. The next day was Saturday. I was at work and I spoke to my parents. They're like, we're with the palliative team. He's being moved to hospice. So we'll fill you up. I'm like, okay. I went about seeing my patients like I would normally do. And then at night they said he's moved to hospice. I was actually going to be traveling the following weekend. My mom's, get on a plane anyhow you can and come here. And I'm like, at that time, just as a refresher, we needed, as a Canadian citizen, I could come, but I needed a compassion release letter so I didn't have to quarantine the 14 days. So compassion release letter was from the government. It's an 8-page process that you have to be, and it's only approved for a month, and the doctors have to sign off. Manu had to sign off on it. My parents, where are you quarantining? Who's taking the liability? I cannot be in certain spaces. Like, everything had to be taken, and I actually had that, luckily, because I was coming. So I finally got my physician to rush me on Saturday night. I couldn't get a PCR testing in time. I'm like, it's a 3-day test. On Sunday, they said Manu was on a palliative, on a morphine drip and his body is shutting down. So say your goodbye. And this time my physician was able to get me a test within hours. So while I was doing that, I told Manu, you need to let go. Just don't wait for me. And I think that was when I first spoke to him, I didn't tell him that. And I went back and I said, I gave him permission not to hold on to. And I said, you're done. You're done suffering. You're done hurting. I'll see you. I'll see you soon. Just go. And within a few hours of the conversation, he was gone. So when I flew, I knew I was going there to plan a funeral. And I reached his house and he had published an article in a dental magazine called Leaving Dentistry This Way Out, about how his cancer had changed his perspective of dentistry and how he had sold his practice due to cancer diagnosis and what he felt about life in general. And from that, he also wrote a lot during his last stages. He was listening to Diljit Dosanjh. He's a big fan. He would listen to his music. I guess that kept him alive in his mind. His mind was sharp. It was his body that failed. And he was writing these beautiful blogs about life lessons while he faced his mortality. He talks about all the accolades couldn't help him as he lay alone in a hospital bed, just staring out at the world that he was no longer allowed to participate in. And he had no one to blame. He was pretty comfortable with the cards that life had dealt him. He accepted it. And we're all going to die, so I'm going to leave something behind in these words, which I then published posthumously. Mm-hmm. I finished it for him, and he was gone. And that grief, I had to work through a lot of it, being my only sibling, being away from my parents, being away from my family structure. When you lose somebody, you have people sharing their stories, their friends, the little nuances. I didn't have any of that. So I created a small podcast recording all of his friends at his last days. And my dad had a difficult childhood and many losses. Being an only child himself, he died. He had no cardiac issues, nothing, no blockages. He flew back from a vacation, and the next day he had a cardiac arrest, and the grief. The doctors were like, we cannot tell you why he died. There's nothing wrong with his heart. His heart just stopped working one day, where he had plans to come see me. So I think that the grief, if we keep it inside, it really does. It's a great book called The Body Keeps Score of trauma. And I'm sure you know well of that book. But it really does. And I don't think my dad, so losing Manu, the cancer, I don't think my father would ever go through it. And watching him die every single day while he was undergoing treatment, not having me around, saying goodbye to him. I don't know what kind of strength my parents had for my brother to be taken to the morgue and them coming home alone in the dark, knowing that money would never come home. That takes an intense amount of strength, and they did it alone. During COVID, when you didn't have that emotional support of family and friends, and their only daughter couldn't come. It's very traumatic. And so my dad will be gone. It's been a year and a half. And grief is something I carry with me every day. Some days it's heavier and some days it's lighter, but it's a burden for me to bear.
I appreciate you sharing all that. And it takes strength to be able to talk about it. And obviously you're sharing your brother's story and trying to continue his legacy, and even the book that you were able to complete on his behalf. But yeah, you're right. I think grief, and this is where social connections and having even conversations like this can help, because we don't have to carry it alone, even though at times it does feel alone, right? This is yours to carry, but you're sharing with others as well and making sure that others can connect in their own way. So are you able to share more about the book and how that's been out there, and why is it so important for you to talk about the book?
It's right here. It's called Life Interrupted. And interesting. So why it's important is because this was his last wish. When I went to him in December of 2020, he was like talking about his paperwork, and I'm like, I don't want to hear about it. Death was this thing that was knocking on our door, and I did not want to answer that door. I was like, yep, we're not going to talk about death, because you're going to live and we're going to do all these things. He's no, I want to be published. And I said, okay, work on it and I'll publish. In February of 21, I found a publisher to publish the book, and he's no, not yet. I have time. I'm going to write more. So when he died, I pulled all the blogs that he wrote. There's some that were unfinished. He talked about luck. He talked about puppies. He had a little dog that he loved, and she got adopted by his palliative nurse and still visits us. He talks about being indestructible, losing money, failure, the ability to endure all the stuff that we can internally as our body, and finding peace. And eventually he talks about new beginnings. That was his last chapter. He had in his mind established that, you know what, this is the end, and that he never wrote after that. So I helped finish it. So one of the things that he didn't have any kids. So there's no little Manus. So this book is kind of like our project together, something tangible that I can share with the world and say, yeah, I had a brother. We created this together. That's why it's so important. It's a short, easy read. It's on Amazon. It's on my website if you want a signed copy from me. But I created that and I wrote a couple of chapters. I actually wrote a chapter for Resilient AF, Blair Kaplan. She's based in Vancouver. But an oral surgeon friend of mine, and I wanted to share this here, she came out with this book called Guided Wellness Regeneration about physicians and doctors and dentists and mental health being. And in here, she talks about when the doctors become patients, and she drew the parallels. And I've known about this parallel for a long time because I read Dr. Paul Kalanathi's book, When Breath Becomes Air, years before Manu's diagnosis. And the parallels between their lives were, they were both in their early 30s, mid-30s. Both were, he was a neurosurgeon, had lung cancer. Manu had oral cancer that metastasized to his lung lining, couldn't breathe, weight loss, all the symptoms. And they were both eloquent writers. Paul actually had a degree in English. Manu's writings are incredible. And they both left their legacies in words. And so she drew these parallels from Manu's book and Paul Kalanathi's book and her book and shared it with the world. So the book, I just got my copy yesterday. So I was like, well, the timing, it couldn't be better. But yes, you're right. Grief is something that is to be shared. It's not a path to be traveled alone. Not alone. You find the people and that support you, and doesn't necessarily have to be the people that you think would be there. And these are hard lessons that I had to learn. But this book is my family's legacy. So I created the oral cancer course and Do a Good Job, which is trademarked as a way to keep my family going and create education. I talk openly about grief and share this little book.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. We'll definitely put the links to the book as well in the show notes. But how are you and your mother now walking on this path of grief together?
Yeah, my mom's got a, she got a very rough hand because between 2020 to 2024, she lost her parents, her brother, her son and her husband in a matter of 4 years. She lost her entire, pretty much the core of her family. So she's had a rough hand. She's doing good. She's one of the strongest women that I've ever encountered. And I derive a lot of my strength from my parents. They were immigrants. They moved to Canada from the Middle East. So we actually went from India to Middle East. Manu was born in Abu Dhabi. And then we moved to Canada in the early 2000s. So in that sense, they were very strong as far as emotionally, physically, relying on themselves, figuring things out. Being courageous, moving from countries to country, it's hard with no network. And they took challenges front on. And so I derive both my parents, I derive strength from. My mom is pretty amazing how she's surviving on her own in Calgary with all the snow and all the challenges that come after the death of a spouse, navigating paperwork, figuring out taxes, figuring out cars, stuff that she never did. But it's, life doesn't stop when you lose somebody. You just have to refragment it and keep moving forward. So for me, my life didn't stop because I lost an essential part of it and I lost a future. But I get to create a different kind of future. And that's the spirit I hold on to. I still have a choice. And that's the thing. No matter where life will take you, at the end of the day, you still get a choice how you present and react to it. I could be depressive and angry and say to the world like, oh, the Canadian, this happened and this doctor did this and this, but that will resolve nothing. But I can change the narrative and say, yes, we all have faults. This could be done to prevent and make it better for others. We can have oral cancer education, bring about the awareness so that early detection is done. Create the legacy of my family with the book, with the training, and share the message with the world that, hey, what you're going through is not that you have to go through it alone. I'm here to help because I walked that path.
Yeah. And that's such a powerful message. I think the biggest thing I remind myself is at the end of the day, I have a choice and I get to choose how I show up irrespective of what's going on around me. And sometimes the world can feel crazy, but we can still choose to not only show up differently, but also connect with people who are doing amazing work like yourself. So thank you so much for this conversation. Anything else you wanted to share with the listeners? Like I said, we'll definitely put links to Manu's book, but anything else?
No, feel free to follow me. I'm at Do A Good Job on Instagram, and I'm happy to connect with anybody who needs guidance. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Dr. Makar. As always, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support this podcast. And on Apple and Spotify, you can leave up to a 5-star review. Please check out the sponsors in the description, as well as the Easy Reflections newsletter, a zero-cost newsletter that goes out weekly, where I explore different mental health topics and provide practical tips and insights for the reader. The link to the newsletter can be found in the show note captions, where you can subscribe directly. Thank you again, and until next time.